The Tom Woods Show, episode 1958.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year. The 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I've got something fun to share with you today. And that is an interview I did with Joshua Smith, who is an at-large member of the Libertarian National Committee, on his program, Break the Cycle. And I think I talked to him, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago? So we're not talking about vaccine passports, whatever. Everything happened really fast. So the world is much different today than it was even then. But all the same, it's a great, fun conversation that spans a variety of topics. It does start off on a somewhat silly note, because I made a comment on social media about Hawaiian shirts and also about men wearing shorts. And man, did I get a lot of pushback about that. So we joked a little bit about that at the beginning. But never fear, there'll be substantive content beyond that. But we all like funny things once in a while, goofy things. So having said that, I hope you enjoy this.
Mr. Dr. Tom Woods, how you doing today, sir?
Doing well, Josh. What's going on?
I can't complain. I'm hanging in there, man. So, we got to do it. We got to address Shirtgate first before we can move on. Where is this hate for Hawaiian shirts coming from, Tom?
Well, first of all, I think I posted about it back on June 30th. It's now, what is it, July 14th? So it's been going on 2 weeks. And, you know, when I look at my Facebook notifications and I see people are still responding to that, I think the thread is 2 weeks old. Let it go. Let it go. Now, the thing is, I did actually, if you can believe it, there are, and I don't blame libertarians for this. I think this is probably true of any group. You'll always find two or three humorless people who really, really took this personally, like an attack on them. Look, I don't care what you wear. Wear whatever you want. I don't care. It's just my opinion. Okay? What difference does that, could that possibly make? And I had people saying, I wish I had the kind of time he seems to have to be worried about what other people are wearing. And I thought, well, first of all, it took me 5 seconds, so I didn't need that much spare time to type out that Facebook. It's just crazy. But yeah, I'm anti-Hawaiian shirt because I think where it originally came from, though, is back from my workaholic days. In my workaholic days, I hated going on vacation because I thought it's frivolously spent time. Think of all the productivity I could be having and think of all the accomplishments and all the work I could be doing. And so I would be surrounded in these areas where we would go vacationing by people wearing Hawaiian shirts who just symbolized for me the lazy, frivolous bum and all that. And I think it kind of stuck in my head from my jerk days. Now I am addicted to traveling more than work. So you would think I might have lightened up a little bit on the Hawaiian shirt people. I just can't bring myself entirely to come around on it, though.
We got to get you some really cool Hawaiian shirts, like some graphic.
No, that's not happening. I mean, because if you say that, people are going to send them to me, and that's going to make me feel bad because I'm never going to wear them. Okay, that's not ever, ever going to happen. Never.
You know what's going to happen at your celebration, right? You know everyone's showing up.
So one of my daughters, I can't remember if it was the 11 or the 16-year-old, but one of them said, 16-year-old, Veronica, said, well, you should tell them that you really, really hate large inflatable rubber duck floaties for the swimming pool, because maybe they'll also show up wearing those. Like, basically make them look as ridiculous as possible, she says, you know, by claiming you hate all these various things, maybe they'll show up looking even more ridiculous. And I thought, ooh, this kid's clever.
Yeah, that is smart. That's smart. You could get people showing up. You could get people showing up in the dildo butt monkey costume from the UK the other day, man. So would you say that it's not enough to be simply pro pants? We must be actively anti-shorts.
All right. I'll say another thing. So you're also, I don't know. I mean, for all I know, you're wearing underwear there, but I'm sure you're going to assure me that it's shorts.
It is.
Yeah. I wore shorts for a long time. And so I said recently that men don't wear shorts, that you're not 12 years old anymore. Nobody wants to see your legs. And then I got like three women saying, I want to say that. That's what the internet is for. All the legs. But then I started getting photos of there's Ron Paul wearing shorts. And all right. when you're Ron Paul, you can wear shorts. And that was just my opinion, that I feel like a little boy when I'm wearing shorts. I mean, that's just over. I used to wear them. So then the response, again, now it's like I don't know why people give a shit, you know, like, why do they care so much? I had people saying, honestly, saying to me, oh, so I suppose I'm supposed to show up to my construction job wearing a suit and tie. So, Josh, are those the two options, either shorts or a suit and tie? We have nothing in between. Shorts or a suit and tie. It's my view. I don't go for this whole crazy thing where men have to wear a jacket and tie wherever they go. If you're at Porkfest walking around a campground in a coat and tie, you look like you're wearing a costume. You look ridiculous. You shouldn't do that. I'm not saying you always have to wear a coat and tie. Look at me. I'm not wearing a coat and tie. I think it's a bad look for men. That's all.
Fair. I'm a big fan of cargo shorts. You can hold more magazines that way. Those pockets are not made for your fiance's lipstick and stuff. They're made for magazines. But we got some super chats. I just want to shout out Elijah Marquez. He can only assume that Tom is wearing his beloved cargo shorts in the artwork as well. Timothy Halpenny, finally caught a live video. Thank you, sir. And Nick Ashley asks Tom if he'd rather have a beer with Nick Fuentes, Nick Sarwark, or Nick Ashley.
Okay. Am I embarrassing myself by saying I don't recognize the name Nick Ashley?
No. He's just a Twitter shit poster. It's fine. He's like the greatest Twitter shit poster, but I mean, he's a Twitter shit poster.
All right. Well, then it would be him because I'm not interested in the other two.
Fair. Actually, the channel members of my YouTube channel, one of the custom emojis that they get is actually a picture of Nick Ashley, like hand-drawn by Top Lobster. It's pretty cool. But anyways.
So Nick Ashley can be consoled and comforted knowing that he won this contest by process of elimination.
Sure, absolutely.
Best possible way.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to get into some more serious stuff here. We had to address Shirtgate. It's very important to my viewers. I mean it. Everyone was asking. I think we've cleared it up now. Everyone gets it. So, Tom, let's talk. Something I've never really listened to or heard much from you is, how did you get involved with the Mises Institute? How did that come to pass?
I was a young pup when this happened. I was a student before. I mean, we had email, but we didn't really have, I don't think there was a Mises.org website. In fact, I'm certain there was not. It was 1993, and I think it was in Reason Magazine or one of these magazines where I saw a print ad for the Mises University program. And I thought, well, this sounds really interesting. I mean, what a nerd. This sounds interesting. I could spend a week of my summer studying economics at the Mises Institute. And so I went, and it was unbelievable. And the thing is, I wanted to learn everything I could. So they mail you some books, and then they give you some recommended articles in scholarly journals. But they're hard to track down. They're not as hard to track down in the age of the internet, but they were hard to track down then. But I had access to a really great university library. So I started tracking down these optional readings and photocopying them and reading those. I mean, I was such a nerd. I had read everything by the time I showed up for that thing. And it was such a great experience. The students I met were great. The faculty, some of them are still teaching at Mises University. I mean, Walter Block's almost 80 now, but he was there. Murray Rothbard gave the opening lecture, and I got to meet him. That was the first time I ever met him. So yeah, you go to a Mises University with Murray Rothbard, that leaves an impression. And, you know, these days it's fashionable to be anti-Rothbard. I'm telling you, this is like anti-Ron Paul. Like, no normal person in the libertarian world is anti-Rothbard. Because you wonder, have you read any of his books? I mean, what's wrong with them? I don't see what's wrong with them. It doesn't mean you have to agree with every single point. He was a pioneer. Maybe he will make some mistakes. But man, was he productive, and his enormous output. I mean, I don't know if it's envy or pettiness or what. But anyway, even though it's fashionable today to be anti-Rothbard, I'll tell you, he was surrounded by students everywhere he went. Everywhere he went, he was surrounded by them. And Lou Rockwell tells the story from that year that sometimes Rothbard would be listening to you, and he would be in this posture, like, you know, like, he'd be doing this while he was thinking about what you were saying. And without realizing it, the other students all of a sudden, they were all kind of doing this, like not mocking him, but somehow it just seemed like the thing to do. So everybody was doing that. And he was the sort of guy who, it would be 1 o'clock in the morning, and most of the faculty would be ready to go to bed. And he'd say, let's go to Denny's. I mean, come on, how could you not love that guy?
I could see.
So that was what my start was. And then before you know it, I was speaking at conferences and stuff.
That's so cool. You got to hang out with all these guys. Man, Murray Rothbard. I mean, Murray Rothbard is really who brought me to the Mises Institute as well, and the ideas of Mises. I mean, if it wasn't for Rothbard, I may have never found Ludwig von Mises, or you, or for that matter. I mean, really, and I keep a couple of his books back here, definitely For a New Liberty, Egalitarianism as a Revolt.
Yeah, For a New Liberty is such a great primer on libertarianism. I mean, who could really dispute that? I don't understand.
That's the book that opened the window that I could never close. That's what I say.
Yeah.
You know, before that, I had read Capitalism and Libertarianism by Milton Friedman. And I actually read The Road to Serfdom by F.A. Hayek prior to this. And then I read For a New Liberty and it was like, that was it.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, that's the one more than those other books.
Now I've tried to get through Human Action, I don't know, 27 times. So.
Yeah. But I mean, but you should read Bob Murphy's book Choice instead. That'll give you all the Human Action you need.
Yeah. It's like the condensed, like Bob Murphy
version. Yeah. I mean, and you know, that's what most normal people do need is that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So
I do love some of Mises' idiosyncratic word choices. I mean, he did write Human Action in English.
Sure.
He had written some of his other books in German, but he came over to the US and he wrote in English. And Henry Hazlitt, who of course wrote Economics of One Lesson, helped him with his to smooth out his English. But he uses these formulations that you so rarely hear other people use. Like he'll say, you know, this myth was exploded when so-and-so. The word exploded to refer to refuting a myth is so awesome. I just love that. I try to sprinkle it into my prose here and there. But now these days, of course, you use the word exploded, you get put on a list. But in the old days, we understood he was being metaphorical.
Sure. Yeah, and English definitely wasn't his first language.
No, so it was a hard transition for him, of course. I mean, I think he was 59. Let's see, was he born in 81, came in 1940? Yeah, I guess he was 59 when he came to the U.S., and he had to start his career all over again. That's no easy feat, but he wound up being enormously productive even then.
Sure. So one of my favorite stories from anybody at the Mises Institute came from Walter Block. One of the first interviews I ever did for any kind of media that I had ever done was when I was working for Think Liberty. This was way before you knew me, before I ran for chair the first time. And I had Walter Block on. Now, Walter doesn't have any social media, so I had to track him down through email, like normal people. And I did, and he was happy to oblige. You know, he's a very nice guy. He's always willing to do cool stuff for people. And he talked to me about how when he was in college, he was very good friends with Bernie Sanders. And he was a socialist. And he went up to this luncheon with this lady that was a capitalist or whatever. And he went up and tried to debate her at the luncheon. And the guy pushed him aside. Hey man, go read this book and come back later. And then he later, you know, come to find out it was Ayn Rand. And he did read the book. And then he came around to where he is today, this Austro-libertarian. But what are some of your favorite stories about people at Mises? Do you got any good ones?
Oh, geez, that's a good one. Well, you know, I've got a story about Hans Hoppe. All right, because, you know, it's fashionable to dislike Hans Hoppe. And again, if people dislike Hans Hoppe, they've never read anything by him. Never. They read the four forbidden sentences or something, you know, and I just can't stand people like that. Well, I heard third hand that there are these four forbidden sentences. You know, go jump in a lake, you anti-intellectual fool. I mean, you read Hans's book, The Economics and Ethics of Private Property. And it's just, if that doesn't knock your socks off, I don't know, maybe you're not understanding it. I don't know. But that's a brilliant book, as is A Theory of Socialism and Capitalism. Anyway, well, I'll put it this way. I don't want to name the name because I really don't want to start fights, especially not, you know, like 16 years after the offending thing happened. But somebody kind of on the outskirts of our circles wrote a fairly mixed to negative review of my Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. Now, the one extravagant – now, that book sold really well, and most books make the author no money at all. People have this impression that you write a book and you retire. No. Almost no book makes the author any money at all. This book made me a lot of money at that time. I've since burned through all of it, so don't come looking to me for being a benefactor. I burned through all that money years ago. But the one extravagance I allowed myself back in 2005 was I bought a BMW, okay? And I had that thing for 4 or 5 years. And then I had enough kids that we couldn't fit them all in the BMW. So I had to move into the minivan world. Then I got back. I realized that they have an SUV that could fit 7 people. So anyway, that doesn't matter. The point is, I bought this car. It was great. So anyway, one day I had dinner with Hans and one or two other people. And I showed him the car when we got to the restaurant. And we started talking about this review of my book written by this guy that we don't really care for. And Hans's response, he said, you should say to him, what kind of car do you drive? That was his response. Okay.
That's great. I had Stephen Kinsella on the show last night. He's such a sweetheart in person too. You know, he gets this bad rap online, but he told me the story. I didn't realize it was Michael Malice that gave the helicopter to Hoppe at the Mises event in New York, and that Kinsella was the one who took the picture with him. I totally forgot about all that. So he told me that whole story, and it was hilarious. Hoppe's hilarious. He's not really up on all the meme culture that surrounds him, but he sounds like he's a pretty funny guy.
I suppose you saw the story by Stefan recently about, I guess he was driving around with Juan Fernando Carpio and they called Hans. And I guess at the moment he called, Stefan started choking on an M&M. And so Hans was having trouble hearing and understanding him. So Juan says, Stefan is, you know, he just, an M&M went down the wrong pipe. And Hans says, Stefan, call me when you are not choking. And he hung up.
That's hilarious, man. I just can't imagine. He seems like a really funny guy, man. Somebody wanted to know from you. So who do you think the most effective libertarian today is concerning real change and freedom in America, at least, but maybe the world too?
Oh, geez. You know, as soon as I give an answer to this, there'll be people telling me, oh, what about so-and-so? And they'll all be right. They'll all be right. I'm very bad at superlatives. You know, who's the best this, the more effective, most effective that? I don't know. I mean, I think some of the ideas that John Bush has with his freedom cells have a lot of potential. Obviously, there are a lot of Bitcoin people doing valuable work. I mean, we need some educational work done. That's true. But in terms of actually making real change, well, also Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center has made it possible for people to talk about at the state level, actually resisting some of the things the federal government is doing and actually taking back liberties for people. So those are all great things. I think Michael is a wonderful example of somebody who just took the bull by the horns. He was one guy working out of his apartment and he believed in certain ideas. And then, you know, what do you know? But then Connor Boyack is doing incredible educational work with his children's book series, The Tuttle Twins.
Oh, sure.
He's got an animated series he's working on and he's got books for young adults and he's produced. He's probably, I don't know what his age is now, but he's got to be 15 years younger than I am, at least 10 or 12 years younger. And he's on his 29th book, you know. What?
Yeah, that's why we have all the Tuttle Twins books here at the house for our, you know, 70,000 kids that we have here in the house. So I just gave your history book to my daughter and told her she needed to check it out. And she also, she has for a New Liberty, the big, huge version. I got her the big, huge version. She hasn't read it yet. And I also just gave her Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules book and said, you know, this is probably one of the most important books. But I totally agree with you. I mean, Michael Bolden is, I don't think people understand the work that Michael Bolden does sometimes. Even some libertarians don't really understand how much work that guy does. I mean, when it comes to legislative season, that guy is, he might as well be, you know, he's actually writing legislation for people.
Well, you know, the 10th Amendment Center produces these amazing draft legislation, templates, basically, that people, legislators across the country can use in their states. So the hard work is done. And that's half the battle sometimes. And Michael does that. So yeah, I contribute pretty substantially to them every month just because what they produce is tangible.
Sure.
And what I produce is actually not that tangible. That doesn't mean it's not useful. I mean, it's like when Coca-Cola runs an ad on a billboard, I'm sure that does something, but it's hard to know exactly what. Like I have people saying that, oh, you converted me from such and such, and then they went on and wrote a great book. And so I indirectly contributed to that. But somebody like Michael Bolden, like we can say in Missouri, this Second Amendment Protection Act, you know, or whatever the wording of it is, this is from him. He basically led that charge. So I found out that apparently I'm the biggest monthly donor to the 10th Amendment Center. So apparently I've gone way overboard, but that's how much I respect him.
Tom, I'm going to address some of these super chats. What are your thoughts on what's happening with John Schaefer? He was great on your show last year.
Yeah, well, I helped to get him his lawyer. So, you know, I was contacted by somebody close to him saying, you know, he's not sure what to do and he needs representation. And I said, I think I can find somebody who would do it for him pro bono. So I hooked him up with somebody and my understanding is that they are working together. But then that person stopped being able to get information about the case. So I don't exactly know what the status is, but I know that the whole thing is absurdly overblown. And, you know, of course, his career is ruined. The rest of the band, because they're all cowards, they all abandoned him, his band Iced Earth. And then the other guy he worked on with Wizards, and I can't remember what it's called, but his other, the band he had with Hansi Kurtz, well, Kurtz has abandoned him too and denounced him. So his life's ruined, his career's ruined. You know, and I mean, there really isn't anything else I can do for him other than get him a free lawyer.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know exactly what the details of this very moment with him are.
Sure, sure. Stitz4, thanks for the super chat shout out. He said, Josh told me he'd give me an ebook if I gave him $5. Not sure where he gets all of them. So let's talk about some ebooks here. You're like the king of ebooks. Now, I've actually created a landing page where you guys can send your email to, because I intend to start putting out ebooks. Now, they will be nowhere near as good as Tom's ebooks. Do you ever make money off these ebooks at all? Or is this all just charity for the movement, man?
Oh, my goodness. Joshua Smith, do I have to take you from naive la-la land into the harsh reality of money making? Okay. So the strategy behind the ebooks is, it's multifold, let's say. So number one, it gets my name out there, because you know, everybody's favorite word is free.
Sure.
And if people can get a free book or a free video or something, they like it. So it's a way of getting my name out there. It also advertises my podcast, because some, not all, but some of my ebooks are repurposed podcast episode transcriptions. So I'll take the episodes I've done on healthcare, get transcripts of them, bundle them together, and release it as Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Healthcare. So I already had those episodes, so it's not a huge amount of work just to compile the transcripts and make it into a book. And so at the end of each chapter, I say, if you enjoyed this chapter, well, I'm producing material of this quality every single weekday at this link. So it encourages people to sign up for the podcast. So that's the second thing. So number one is the name. Number two is the podcast. But number three, the real thing, is the email list itself, because I think I put out a fairly decent newsletter. Now, this week, I've got a lot going on. I got Mises University next week. I got Freedom Fest, where I'm speaking four times. You know, something's got to give here. So I don't think I only wrote to one of my two email lists today. But the idea of the email list, though, is this is how I follow up with people, because anybody who's interested in one of my ebooks would be interested in the other things that I have to offer, like Liberty Classroom, you know, sure, which teaches people history and economics, or like the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum, or anything like that, or who may want to support me and get the various benefits at my supporting listeners website. So once they get the ebook, they get on the mailing list. And then every weekday, I send them something really interesting that they feel compelled to open. And then at the end of that thing, I make a pitch for something, or I send them to an episode of my show to get them used to listening to the show. But the idea of that is, if somebody objects to that, like, hey, you're pitching me something at the end of this email, then get off my list. I don't cater to commies. I'm not interested in the person. Because in the same way that we don't begrudge an AM radio host who spends an hour talking to us and then takes 7 minutes to run through some ads, we don't turn off the radio indignantly and say, I'll never listen to that guy again. No normal person does that. Well, that's the same principle with email. That is the business model, is that you give away something for free. Even though the newsletter itself is free, that's often not enough to get people to sign up. You have to give them what Bob Bly calls something free on free. You got to give them a free book to get them to sign up for your free mailing list. I don't know, because mostly people don't want to get email. That's until they get my emails. Then they say, wait a minute, I guess on second thought, I do want these emails. So, but that's the model, that you give them something they really want. And I've come up with some pretty darn good ebooks. Like, for example, I came up with one that's particularly appropriate these days, because I keep seeing left libertarians saying that the Squad are the best libertarians in Washington right now. The Squad would be AOC and her colleagues.
Of course.
So I wrote an ebook called AOCIsWrong.com. Well, it's called AOC is Wrong, and the website is AOCIsWrong.com. What's interesting about that one, by the way, is when I reserved AOCIsWrong.com, she wasn't yet being called AOC. That happened a little bit later. That was just a guess on my part. I thought, well, I'm not going to say Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's too long. So I just abbreviated it, and it turned out to be the abbreviation she started going with. So I own AOCIsWrong.com, and it just goes through all the areas where she's wrong. But yeah, that's the model. I give away something people really want, and people do want to see, even though they kind of know how to answer her arguments. They don't necessarily know all the facts and figures, sure, but I got them. And so then in return, they wind up on my mailing list, and then frankly, I sell them things. But the thing is, you don't have to buy anything. If you don't want anything, don't buy it. Same with when you listen to the radio. You could listen to Rush Limbaugh for 50 years, never buy a single thing. It doesn't matter. You can keep listening.
Sure. I've never woken up in the morning and saw Tom Woods' email in my email folder that I was upset about getting.
Thank you, Jim. That's exactly what I'm shooting for.
Yeah, I usually wake up and I'm like, ooh, new Tom Woods email. I feel that like most of the people on your list feel that way. You know, we all get excited because it's not a short email. I mean, you usually have this really nice long email. It's a nice thing that we all get to read. It tells
I work on it.
Yeah.
It's work.
Yeah. Thankfully, right now, my fiance does most of the emails. So,
well, that helps. See, right now it's the summertime, and that means that during the day, you know, I can be spending time with my kids more than I can ordinarily be spending time with them because they don't have any schoolwork. And every once in a while, the email just, you know, doesn't happen.
True.
But that's the nice thing about running your own thing, that if that doesn't happen, nobody can fire me.
Right.
You know, it's my thing. I just chose to forego whatever benefit I might have gotten from writing a newsletter that day because the benefit of being with the kids is outweighs it.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Rich Clark, thanks for the super chat, $10 super chat. He said, Tom's legs are unreasonably hot right now. If only there was a market solution for that. Jeez, they're never going to let you live this down, ever.
No, they're not. No, they're not. By the way, if it matters, because I'm being comfortable around the house today, I'll let you know what I've got on.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I just have like sweatpants on, just like ordinary, like, exercise style pants right here.
Yeah, look at that. Tom's showing off the extra. You know, I got pants like that too because I live in the Midwest, Tom. You know what I mean? So like in the winter, shorts don't work.
I point this out just so people don't think I walk around my house in a coat and tie. I don't know where they're getting this idea.
Top Lobster is the guy who does all the art for the show. He's the one that drew that wonderful thumbnail of you. He said, you're indirectly responsible for him drawing me. He told me a story that he was very frustrated with the sales aspect of his artwork. And you were the one who told him to listen to Adam something, and it changed his whole perspective. So,
it might have been Ben Settle, but no, Adam Schneider.
Yeah, yep, that's who it was.
Because Adam Schneider is a Mises Caucus guy.
Yeah.
And I think he designed the Mises Caucus merch store, and he's just an absolute expert at coming up with designs that sell on Etsy and Amazon and stuff. And I even paid for my own mother to get 2 hours worth of consult with him. So he really is great. He's a good guy to get to know.
Sure.
He's stuck in Canada, poor Adam. Oof. So he hasn't been able to see the sun in like a year and a half.
Sure. Well, let's talk about geography a little bit. So you're Florida. You're a Florida man. How has it been for you? I mean, during this whole, you've written extensively on the COVID stuff, but how do you feel about like DeSantis and the way he's run your state and stuff like that during all this?
Well, I mean, at the beginning, he did lock us down for a while, and he's admitted that that was a mistake, and very, very rare for a politician to admit that's a mistake, because Trump can't admit that it was a mistake. He refuses to admit it, but DeSantis will admit it. So, that's at least something. But yeah, I remember my county had curfew. A curfew? Like, what does this have to do with a curfew? Like, what does that have to do with anything? If anything, that means that people will crowd together even more during the hours when they're allowed to be out. I mean, why are you doing this? It doesn't even make sense. So that was annoying. And in fact, the first place to really open indoor dining, I'm pretty sure, was Georgia, not Florida. I had not been indoors eating a meal for a month and a half. And now I know there are a lot of people out there, they rarely go out to eat, they make all their own meals, and those are wonderful salt of the earth people. I cannot be those people, okay? I prepare some of my meals, but other times I'm a lazy bum and I want somebody else to serve me, okay? And so this was making me crazy. I mean, dining out is one of the pleasures of my life. So when Georgia opened up this much to let restaurants have dine-in customers, Jenna and I got in the car, drove up to Atlanta and spent a week there. Just eating at restaurants that were open. And it was a sliver of restaurants that were open, but there were some. We went to a Morton Steakhouse. That was the first place we went to after the craziness. But then also we went to a Waffle House. And we went to a Waffle House at like 3 in the morning. Because there you go, right? I mean, they're open. Come on. And it was so weird. You're supposed to place your order and then stand outside and wait. And then when your food was ready, they would let you come in and sit down. And I remember this, and I think I've been to Waffle House at 3 in the morning more times than I care to recall, but I'll just never forget that night. Although actually, no, this may have been in Dallas. We were going around looking at all the different places that were slightly opening up. We were taking trips. So we went to Dallas. That's where we went to Waffle House. Texas was opening more than Dallas was because, as usual, the cities are run by leftists. But I'll never forget sitting down at that Waffle House and hearing the poor cashier saying to a customer at the register, "Sir, you're bleeding." And I remember thinking, working at Waffle House at 3 in the morning must be rough.
Yeah, could you imagine?
We always leave big tips.
Of course. Of course, as you should. I mean, it's Waffle House. Those people are not making very much money, and they work
their tails. Yeah. There have been times when I don't know how. They must be exhausted at the end of the day. So I love to surprise them with some huge number on the receipt, but I've already left. So because I don't want them to tell me I'm great or whatever. I mean, I just want them to have a happy life.
Sure.
There was one time they tried to chase after me to say thank you, which I appreciate, but it's just awkward for us both. So I do. And also my kids appreciate that.
Sure.
We were at a Denny's once, and at Christmas, we have this thing called the Christmas tip. And that means that we go out to dinner, but it has to be a place where it can't be a fancy place, because some fancy places, the tip is going to be $100 just doing 20%, you know? Sure. So we go to like a Denny's, you know, where a lot of people will hang out. I don't want to mention particular demographics, but I'm talking about old people who will go and leave like $1.12 as a tip, you know, like it's rough. And so we'll go there and leave $100 tip. And that's called the Christmas tip. We do that every year. And one year we did it, and we hadn't left yet by the time the waitress realized it. She was carrying a tray. She saw the amount of the tip, and she dropped the tray. Oh. And the kids have never forgotten this moment. And she came over and told us what a lifesaver this was. And I remember thinking, my gosh, that's hard.
Yeah.
To be in a spot where that one act of kindness is the difference between barely hanging on and disaster.
Sure. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how many people are $100 away from being homeless. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
$100
yeah.
away.
And I kind of got us off on a tangent. But the nice thing about Florida, though, was that as it did start opening up, I could start resuming doing things I liked again. So I did see Rob Schneider do stand-up comedy at a venue that I like very much, the King Center in Melbourne. And then I did get to see some live music, which has been good. You know, and also I've been able to go to plays. I love the theater, and I've been able to see a couple of plays here. It's amazing to think that during all this, some people were rehearsing for a play. How is this possible? But in DeSantis's Florida, it was possible.
Sure.
But it's been in a way bittersweet, because at the same time, it's hard not to be reminded of all those people who would desperately love to see a play or go to a movie or do all the things that I've been able to do, but who can't do it.
Sure.
So on the one hand, I want to cherish these wonderful things about life, but I also want to remember other people who are not having the same fortune.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And living in Iowa has been pretty nice too. We were locked down. We were never locked down, but our restaurants went to like 50% capacity. Basically, that's all that really happened. And that happened for 2.5 weeks. And then they stopped that. And then the governor made mask mandates illegal after like 31 days. And she refuses to do the COVID passports. And I had a state legislator from Iowa come and sit on the couch a couple weeks ago. He broke it all down really well. And so,
oh, that must be Jeff Shipley.
It was Jeff Shipley. Yeah. He lives about 2 hours away from me. And he drove all the way up and had dinner with the family and then sat on the couch and did a live show with me. So,
great.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He's an interesting guy for sure.
I've known him for a long time, and he still looks like he's 12 years old.
He does. So
I don't know how he does it.
I was surprised at how tall he was. He's as tall as me. I was like, man, I thought he was going to be much shorter. Filmmaker 58, thanks for the $4.99 super chat. He said, if Tom Woods knew Max Justice existed, I'd be happier. Culture precedes politics. My friend does a superhero web series on YouTube that's actually really cool, called Max Justice, and it's libertarian stuff. So, let's see. Voluntarius, the comic series. So excited for Tom Woods 2000. See y'all there. Taxation is theft. I'm sure.
Gee, I wonder who that is.
You know who that is. Shannon Lee, thank you for the $10 super chat. Would Tom vote DeSantis if he runs for governor again? Also, scale from 0 to 10. How scared is he of Malice's appearance at the 2000th episode?
All right, let's go in reverse order. Let's start with Malice. I don't know who this guest is. I don't even know if it's a person. Like, I don't know if it's a human being. It could be an animal. Like, I with him, I don't even know. It could be an inanimate object. I don't even know with him. And we all know you can't rule out anything with that guy.
Nothing.
I've had some people suggest possible names. I just don't think any of them are true. And the thing is, I don't want to say any of them, because then that'll spoil it if I accidentally happen to be right. I will say that I texted him the other night to say I'm starting to write out the plan for the evening of the 2000th episode. And I just want to know, do you have any preference for how far into the show your segment appears? And he says, no preference, but just want you to know I will steal the show.
Of course he will. What's your favorite thing about Michael Malice?
Yeah, no, I'm not answering that anymore.
I had to do it. Yeah. I told somebody I wasn't going to ask that on my show anymore until I control Michael Malice to come on Break the Cycle, because he's he's going to big time me for a long time. I'm sure it'll take a while before I can actually have him on the show. But I've asked Dave Smith that, and all kinds of people on the show. I always ask him that, because it's always a question somebody wants to know.
Yeah, I know, but I refuse to. I've done it too many times already. But then with DeSantis, well, if my choice is DeSantis and a clone of the other candidate we had last time, then yeah, I would vote for DeSantis. If there's some libertarian who thinks I'm not pure enough because of that, you have to be out of your mind. Yes, I know he's wrong on X and Y and Z. I know that. But on the issue of our time, he stood up not just to Fauci and the president, whatever. He stood up to the whole world, practically the entire world. So the entire world has had to go out of its way, make a special effort now to pretend Florida doesn't exist, to keep saying, well, we better go back into lockdown because so-and-so. They have to really try now because the very existence of Florida shows that that's not so. On, yeah, that. If there are people who say that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the most libertarian member of Congress, they're going to criticize me for voting for DeSantis.
Right.
I don't know what to tell. I've seen a so-called pragmatist libertarian say, yeah, you know, I have my disagreements with her on some economic policy. You know, like that's just some side thing. You know, the economy is just profits, and we know that's just dirty. I just don't understand.
We started calling them what Lou Rockwell calls them now, regime libertarians.
Yeah, because they're just wrong on every. I mean, AOC is wrong on everything. I'm sorry, she's wrong on everything. And they'll say, oh, but she's good on immigration or whatever. On everything you can imagine, every bad trend in the country, she's encouraging. Every bad trend, she's encouraging. It doesn't matter if it's economic policy, monetary theory. She's promoting hideous monetary theory. She obviously knows nothing about it. If it's energy, the great Alex Epstein testified recently, and she was there, and he just absolutely leveled her, laying out the facts, saying, you are going to keep these people poor. I thought we wanted to make them better off. You are clearly going to keep these people poor. So anyway, yeah, I don't care if these people think I'm impure for but go jump in a lake.
Yeah, I know there's a lady who's running against her in New York that is super brash, like ultra New York lady, like got the full New York accent and everything. And she's wild. She's the one that called Nancy Pelosi the C word. And I'm like, man, it'd be hilarious. It will never happen in New York, where she, in her district, but it would be funny if she got beat. One's compliment. Thanks for the $5 super chat. Any book you would recommend on monetary policy, inflation? Have already read Hazlitt, but looking for something more in-depth on the topic. Thanks, Tom.
Well, for the book that's really going to give you the nuts and bolts of how it all works, because a lot of our material acts as if you already know the terminology, you already know what everything means, but a book that's really going to break it down is not out yet, but it's coming out soon, and that is Understanding Money Mechanics by Bob Murphy. So I would keep your eyes peeled for that if you really want to understand monetary policy and exactly how it works. Now, another book I would recommend, though, and you can read this one for free at the Mises Institute, is The Ethics of Money Production by Guido Holtzman. The Ethics of Money Production. Now, even though it sounds like it's just a work of philosophy, there's a lot of economics in there. And Guido is a great economist. But he was also making moral arguments against unsound money. Now, you'll notice there are some quotations from popes and stuff in there. That's because he initially wrote it for the Acton Institute, and they didn't want to publish it. And I think because it's too radical and great. I like the Acton Institute, but they're not exactly edgy like Guido. So I found that to be a very helpful book, helping me understand kind of how the monetary system works, but also what's wrong with it, not just economically, but morally.
True.
So those are the two books I would recommend off the top of my head. So wait, Bob's book is already available online because it was serialized. They published one chapter periodically while he was writing it. So all the chapters can be found somewhere, but it's going to come out in a book really soon.
Sure, sure. Drywall All, thanks for the $20 super chat. He says, Tom Woods, the man. You're always taking care of me, Drywall. I appreciate you. Shout out to Jordan Price for becoming a supporter of the channel. Man, it's so cool. Every time you become a supporter of the channel, you get a exclusive live stream after the show with every guest. But here's another one that I wanted to get into. I was going to talk a little bit about this with you anyway. So Level Zero, thanks for the $5 super chat. He says, so when does your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Cuba come out? That's a great question. Also, what do you think is going to happen with Cuba?
Well, the thing is, I think by the time I would get that out, it's not going to be hot anymore. So I don't think people will wind up seeing it. The thing is that those books, though, have kind of already been written. Umberto Fontova has a great book called Fidel that really tells the story. On the other hand, the benefit of my ebook would be that it's free. You don't have to buy it. So I could see doing that. It's just I don't have a huge amount of material on Cuba. But my episode 797, and you may say, Woods,
Surely you have not memorized all 2,000 episodes. No, just yesterday I linked to it, so I happen to know. My episode 797 on Cuba, I think, has all the information you need, because it answers all the arguments you've heard a million times, like, you're forgetting how bad the regime before Castro was, and look at all the progress they've made under Castro. But then what you've left out is, well, let's see, yeah, the numbers look good compared to like 100 years ago, but where were they compared to 50 years ago? So it's like, it reminds me of the old expression, how do you make a small fortune? Answer, you start with a large fortune and piss a lot of it away. Well, and likewise, Cuba was actually doing really well, according to a lot of metrics, in the 1950s, such that even after Castro brings it down a couple of notches, it can still fool people into looking pretty good. But they don't realize that it's actually deteriorated from where it used to be. So all that stuff is in that episode. So I definitely would encourage people to do that. As for what's going to happen, I mean, who can say? There's no way to predict anything like this. And I don't have any real connections in the Cuban community. And I know some people who are very interested in it, but I don't know what's likely to happen. And I don't know what the CIA's role is in this. Like, anytime I see protests, whether they're justified or not, I always wonder, does the CIA have a hand in this? And if so, what's their angle?
Sure.
I mean, they've let Cuba be, you know, be itself for a long time. What's their angle here? So I don't know. I think there are too many wild cards to really say. But I think it's a great thing to see. And of course, it puts the lie to the idea that it's all just misunderstood and that the blockade is what has caused their economic difficulties. And that doesn't seem to be what the protesters are saying.
No. And everybody here in the States would love to make it about, well, it's because they want the vaccines. I've actually heard this from people. They're protesting because they want the vaccines. No, they're protesting because they don't have any food.
Yeah. I guarantee you these people are not even worried about COVID.
No.
Well, it wouldn't even dawn on them.
No.
That is a rich, privileged white man concern.
Sure.
Honestly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Shout out to Portal Gun Anarchy 2. If you could give a shout out to the End of the Damn Wars rally on Twitter, that would be awesome. We could use your support and anyone willing to attend. Shout out to anything in trying to end the wars. What about you, Tom?
I don't know what this is, but I support it.
Yeah. Anything that's trying to end the empire and the wars, I'm down.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I just recorded with Scott Horton for tomorrow on Biden saying that the war in Afghanistan is coming to an end. And I wanted to know from Scott, for one thing, is this going to be one of these, they say they're ending it, but they're not really. But no, it looks authentic. And it looks like Biden, because I asked him, I said, you know, why would Biden do this? There's no real anti-war constituency out there. And as the past couple presidents have shown, just inertia on Afghanistan seems to let you just coast through. So why did he do it? And Scott says, well, since at least 2009, it's been really clear that he's not really interested in propping up the regime in Kabul, and that he was saying things like that to Obama. Anyway, you can listen to the episode. But yeah, obviously, that's my number one issue.
Sure. Yeah. I think if you want to be a staunch libertarian, especially in living in the empire here, That's got to be your number one issue. It's just got to be, you know, before all the culture stuff, before, you know, the drug stuff. The Fed goes hand in hand, obviously, you know, but it's got to be the number one issue. I mean, could you imagine not looking at that and then going, well, we got to worry about trans rights before we worry about ending these damn wars? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, and the people will say, but can't we do both? And you can. It's just that it never seems to be both. No. It's always just that one issue.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only issue under the sun. And meanwhile, you have people who are, well, let's say, way less privileged than anybody in the United States. I don't care what your characteristics are. Way less privileged, who are getting, you know, getting their houses destroyed and their lives ruined and their kids' limbs blown off. And then to be worried, well, I want to make sure trans people can be part of that. No. Trans people should want to be conscientious objectors from this.
True.
They have the unique moral opportunity to say, as marginalized people ourselves, we refuse to be part of the American empire and drop bombs on these people. And that is a completely misplaced understanding of what equality is all about. The equality that we favor is not equality of raining down terror on vulnerable people around the world. You know, they have this opportunity to stand up and say that.
Yeah, it's a good, it is great. And, you know, women have had the opportunity to say that you know, when it comes to combat, and they, you know, it's like it's especially the male feminists pushing for it. No, women should be allowed to be in combat. It's like, no one should have to be in combat. No one.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy crap. That's the biggest super chat I've ever got. Rich Clark, thanks for the $100 super chat. My goodness.
Yes, it's like the Christmas tip.
Yeah, he gave me a Christmas tip, man. I appreciate it. You know, I have 97 kids, so every time you guys super chat, it feeds another child. I appreciate it. Rich Clark said, thank you both for all you do. Love Tom. I'm a happy supporting listener. Everyone should join. Ask Tom to check his DMs on MeWe. I have a few domains I'd love to transfer for free to Tom in order to help combat disinfo and spread liberty. Yeah, pretty cool. Rich Clark, thank you, sir. One's compliment. Thanks for the $5. He said, strongly considering moving down to Florida from Toronto, indoor dining gyms, etc., still closed down up here. I've lost all hope in this country. I think a lot of Canadians are losing hope in their country, Tom. What do you think?
Well, it's not, if by a lot we mean a majority, it's not that,
sure,
unfortunately. Sure. But there is a significant minority that's loud and angry. I just wish they could have their own society away from these crazy lunatics, honestly. Very sad and frustrating. And as I say, Adam Schneider is one of those people. And Adam Schneider, by the way, we were talking about him before as a guy who does print-on-demand stuff. He was actually in law enforcement. And he says that one of the things that got him out of that was that he just could not imagine enforcing all this crap on people.
Sure.
He couldn't do it anymore. I mean, you can rationalize being in law enforcement and being a libertarian. You can come up with different ways to make that work in your mind. But I guess this was just the final straw for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what Canada needs. Have you had Chris Sky on your show yet?
I have not.
Yeah, he's great. He's the guy who was walking around the Canadian airport without a mask on and no vaccine and saying, you know, you guys don't have to do this. Our constitution allows us to not have to deal with all this crap. Just tell them no and go on your way. And then he got on all these talk shows and stuff. But he's actually like a bodybuilder. He's all tattooed up and stuff. He's pretty funny guy, man. You should check him out. He's got a big following now too. Trollertarian. Tom, thanks for being in the realm of inspirational libertarians and inspired me. Josh, don't say the R word. Oof. I said the R word on the Tower Power Gang Hour podcast last night or the night before. And it kind of set Facebook off that I said a word that has no meaning really anymore because it's not a clinical diagnosis anymore. So people got a little mad at me. You know which word I'm talking about.
I'm not sure I do.
It used to be a clinical diagnosis for a mental illness.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't use that word.
It is no longer, but it was a comedy podcast and I just kind of let go and it was fun. I felt
that. Yeah, that's okay.
William Barger said, personal thanks, Josh, for talking to people from LPNH during the fiasco and going to the LNC with it. And personal thanks to Tom Woods for rigging Porkfest Soapbox Idol for me to win. Keep up the good work, guys. What did you do, Tom?
That's not so. You just had the best rant. That was what made you win. Yeah, I mean, I actually knew a couple of the people personally.
Sure.
And I love Dennis Pratt. I mean, in my book, I wish Dennis could have won, but I totally disagreed with everything he said. So I just, in good conscience, couldn't let him win. So
you picked the tall guy, huh?
That's right. They just put the video of that up. Soapbox Idol. They just put it up.
I'll have to check it out. I'm going to make it to Porkfest next year. There's no doubt about it. It'll be my first Porkfest, and I have to.
Well, it's going to be, my wedding is at the same time, June 25th.
Yeah.
But honestly, like they got to cut me some slack here. I mean, there were just no other dates that worked. And I have a very limited number of available dates to do anything. And that was the one. So.
Gotcha. Well, I'll
find out who my real friends are.
Yeah. Why can't you get married in the forest in New Hampshire, Tom?
Yeah. That is so the opposite of me.
Yeah, no shit. I'm a big fan of your fiance, though. I got to say, when we were having the baby, man, she really was, you both were really great to us. And we appreciate all the great things that the baby still has. You know, all this, she kind of went all out on our baby registry for sure. And I appreciate you guys very much.
Well, our pleasure.
Jermaine Vincent, another $100 super chat. My goodness, receive my Christmas tip. Thank you so much. Tom, you're coming on every once a week from now on, okay? rando person, thanks for the super chat. So Tom, what's coming up next for you? We're coming up on an hour. Of course, we'll do the short exclusive stream after this, but what is next for Tom Woods?
Well, the next thing is later this year, I'm launching my biggest, most important project yet. And you're the first person who's asked me a question that I can answer by telling them about it. And I hinted at it in one of my emails and I hinted at it on one of my episodes. But it has to do with this, that it's great that we have all the books and articles and videos on all aspects of libertarianism, and I've contributed a chunk of those, so I'm in no way disparaging those. That's really all I can do. I have no other skills. This is it. So I'm not disparaging them. But I think a lot of people right now would say that the biggest problems they're facing in their lives have nothing to do with libertarianism. They just have to do with the fact that we're living in a society that can't stand the sight of us. How do you navigate a society like that? So educating your kids, how do you, what in heaven's name am I supposed to do? And how? Yeah, I know you can just say homeschooling, but that's difficult for some people. So what exactly are they supposed to do? Or, all right, now that I'm smart enough as a libertarian to know that my money is going to lose its value over time, so I can't just save dollar bills in a bank account, what am I supposed to do? I'm just doomed? What am I supposed to do? And then the answer you get from libertarians half the time is, oh, just buy gold. What? Like that's your answer?
Or Bitcoin.
That's a totally unsatisfying answer. So stuff like that. Or relationships, okay? Try navigating the dating scene these days. Good luck, okay? So we've got one problem after another. We have people feel like they live in communities where they feel like an alien, like no one understands them, or they're like an outcast if they express their ideas. I basically want to create something where every single month we learn something important about leading a fulfilling life, even in a world that hates us. So I'll bring the best education and homeschooling people on. I'll bring the best money people on. But people have an actual track record of knowing what they're talking about. In fact, I remember there was a guy in the first Ron Paul campaign. His name was Larry Lepard. And he had enough money that he was able to take out full page ads in, I think, the USA Today and maybe other newspapers, where it was an open letter from the founding fathers about Ron Paul. And it was this mock open letter from the founding fathers saying that, look, you got to vote for Ron Paul. And he did that out of his own money. Okay. He's a Harvard grad, super smart. And his investment decisions were so good. And he would just share them with people. He wouldn't charge. He wouldn't have an investment newsletter that cost $1,000 a year. He would just openly and publicly share what his positions were and what moves he made every day so that other people could just do what he did. And he just had an uncanny track record with it. And then I don't remember exactly what regulation he was violating. He was told he was not allowed to do that. What? This guy is for free helping the world. And he was not allowed to do it anymore. That's the kind of guy I want to pluck and bring onto my system and talk to my folks, or even people thinking about relocating. You know, okay, well, what are some good places to live? I know people all over the country who can help you do that and make these decisions. So in other words, it would be not a school of libertarianism, but more of a school of life to be able to navigate a world that is hostile to us, where we feel like outcasts, but where now, with the help of this community and the resources and the genuine experts that I'm going to bring on, little by little, we can make things better and better and more prosperous and successful for us, both not just financially, but spiritually and emotionally and just the satisfaction we derive from life, I think will be enhanced by what I'm launching.
Well, I love that, Tom. I think that's a great thing. I had Patrick Smith on the show a while back. He's the host of Anarchast and Disenthrall Media, and he does a bunch of stuff with Anarcho Polco. One of the most important things that I've ever really had anybody on my show say to me was, I said, "What do you think's the best way to further, you know, our goals and make a better society?" And he said, "You got to start with yourself." He said, you make yourself better, you enrich your life, and then your community will watch that and they want to do better. And so any way we can do that, make everyone better, that's a great idea, Tom. Absolutely.
So I'm very pleased about that.
Yeah, definitely. Please let me know what I can do to help out. I will. You know, I'm not the smartest guy, in case anybody's wondering. I'm not one of these scholarly guys like the rest of the people I have on the show. I'm just a blue collar working guy from the West Coast, but I do read all your books.
Thank you.
Rich Clark, thanks for the super chat. He says, "You're not just an outcast, you're an extremist." Drywall again with another $20 super chat. Tom, where can all these wonderful people find you and support you at?
That's a good question. Well, of course, I would like to send them to one of the ebooks, wouldn't I?
Yes, you should.
Yeah. So let's do AOCiswrong.com. Go there. You get that great ebook, and then you'll start hearing from me. And if you hate hearing from me, it's just with one click, you'll never hear from me again. And, you know, every once in a while, somebody gets on that list somehow, I don't know how, and they're unhappy and they disagree with me. So I don't know why they subscribe in the first place. And they have to, in all caps, tell me that they demand that they get unsubscribed. Now, by law, all such emails have an unsubscribe link at the bottom. So there's no need ever to announce to me that you want to unsubscribe. Just click the link. So I should just ignore them and just unsubscribe them. But I always respond by saying, all my emails by law contain an unsubscribe link at the bottom. I will click it for you.
Yeah.
And that's the last word they ever hear from me. But I don't get that many unsubscribes. Once people are on, they want to stay on.
Sure, sure. And yeah, there are people that are signing up to be there for a reason. So, Tom, I appreciate the hell out of you, man. You have unwittingly, unknowingly probably been a mentor to me over the last several years. There's several times where I've had to take to heart things that you've said to me, including a private phone call we had not too long ago when I was still debating running for chair. But I do appreciate you, sir, and I will see you here in just a couple minutes for the exclusive stream.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it tomorrow. I got Tho Bishop from the Mises Institute, and we'll be talking about some forbidden topics, no doubt. So be sure to join me for that, and thank you so much for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.